Hello and welcome back to the Age of Sigmar podcast for the wide world of wargaming. Back again are your hosts Alex, John, Garrett, and Jeremy is going to be in here too since Matthew is not available tonight. John, what's on your workbench today?
I started assembly on some of the rest of the endless spells for my Skaven. I'm going to get that big swarm of Skaven out on the table there. And that's it, man. I tell you, it's been a long week and a long weekend. And so I thought I would start, finish things off with just a little bit of the old Knob Creek single barrel, 120 proof in my glass here with a nice round ice cube. And oh yeah, exactly what I need to finish up a Sunday. So that's that. You know, Garrett, I'm telling you, what are you doing this week?
Well, I had a wonderful week recovering from Adepticon. I got to drive 12 hours there and then 12 hours back. Got home Monday at one in the morning. So, and then I had to jump right back into work. And so I haven't really had a long time to recover, but I've got around to picking up my pre-ordered Judgments of Khorne. And so I was able to get those built tonight. So I can start using those without proxying them anymore when I play my new Khorne book. And I have a glass of water because I am recovering from Adepticon. And so... yeah, that's about all I have going. Looking forward to start getting back into things. Got a lot of tournaments coming up. This summer is going to be super busy, so trying to plan all those out. But so, Jeremy, how are things going with you?
My workbench is full. I managed to sprain my back, breaking some concrete outside of my house, so no. I'm super excited about that. Just being permanently glued to a chair to paint some more Fire Slayers for this impending release. I don't even know what's in the book, but I just know I'm probably going to be playing that for a couple of weeks until I get Disillusion of the Army again.
Let's hope it's not all Volkite Berserkers.
It's probably going to be garbage. But either way, I'm super excited to be garbage for a bit, you know, because after, you know, building a whole Khorne army in a week and playtesting that, and that was a ton of fun. I'm super excited about this new release. I'm enjoying some lovely Bowie brewing beer as a... some of you already know it is my favorite brewery in Oregon. Some cream ale. It's absolutely delicious. All right, Alex, take it away.
Well, you know, I am also not partaking in anything too saucy. Just drinking a coffee right now at 7:24 in the evening. So, you know, I'll be up all night.
You guys are making me seem like an alcoholic over here.
Well, I mean, with the...
Hey, Jeremy's got his beer.
You know, the first 10 minutes of the podcast is essentially a sub-podcast of alcohol reviews by John Furenhelm. So...
I couldn't get out of the house to go get some scotch today because it's fucking back pain. But other than that, yeah, I would have...
You know what's good for back pain? Scotch.
Yeah, just when you need it the most.
Yeah, I agree.
So wait, you were breaking concrete, is that right, Jeremy? Were you like digging a third level to your home or something?
Yeah, no, I'm actually building a greenhouse on the side of my house.
Oh, so very nice.
Oh,
I set up a third 40 Warhammer table in a green room, so get ready to sweat.
Ooh, okay.
Well, that sounds awesome. Are you gonna grow some peppers out there maybe?
No, mostly succulents. I don't think we're gonna be growing any Carolina Reapers in Oregon.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, there is quite a bit on our schedule today, you guys. You know, for our listeners, we are going to be briefly reviewing a T and a GT that happened this weekend, and we'll also be taking a peek into the player packet for a Bay Area Open for Age of Sigmar, which is actually going to be the very first Bay Area Open that is going to be hosting Age of Sigmar this upcoming May. Now, you know, on to the events, however, there were two events that we do want to give a short shout out to. One was the Haven April RTT in Spokane, Washington. This was won by our co-host Matt with his Ideneth Deepkin. Now, they do not upload lists yet at this event, so there's only a limited amount of information we can share about it. But Jeremy has some intimate knowledge of this army list. And unfortunately, since Matthew can't really give us a play-by-play, Jeremy, What is his list?
So Matthew, I know, as you know, plays Deepkin mostly for the last like 2 years now, or since the books dropped. He's basically playing the Kaelin King, two Soul Scryers, for, you know, allowing him to outflank, or, you know, bringing things from the board edge from his army. A huge block of Morsar, usually 12 or 9. I'm guessing 12. He's probably brought the same list as last time. 20, you know, and then a unit of 30 thralls, a unit of 10 thralls, and like 20 Eternal Guard, which are like the Wanderers, like basically super duper awesome. Like, I don't die as long as you don't have Mortal Wound unit, and I'm in cover. They're really, really good for holding objectives, which is what Deepkin usually have a problem with, especially a home objective, since you want to be kind of maneuvering and dedicating all your forces into your opponent's face as quickly as possible. And it's a cheap investment for that. And that's basically the list. Don't really have, it doesn't, it sounds very little on paper, but it hits hard and it sticks around for a bit. So I think you might have one unit of Ishling Guard as well on top of that. It's hard to tell because he's rotated. He moves units up and down between advances, but it's usually consistently that core in the list. You know, the thralls do a lot of work, killing basically chaff and infantry, and then even like characters if they can get into them. And then the Morsars just do what they do best, which is alpha strike whatever you need off the table, like, you know, a Gristle Gore general if it's turn three, or if it's or basically just really about anything that's just a single model character, just, or monster, just gets nuked off the table.
Pick any one or two units and say goodbye when you start pushing those forward.
Oh yeah, especially with the plus six charge. You know, they come off the table 9 inches away if you're near the board edge, and then they get plus six to charge with the double soul scryers, and it's like good luck, good night, prince. And he's been, maybe he played the one where he's played. So the other alternative list he's been kicking around is one with a big unit of Ishling Guard and Sisters of the Thorn, so you can reflect mortal wounds back with a unit that ignores rend, but can still get bonuses to, you know, armor saves, such as in the way of cover, or like if he brings another caster from the Deepkin that can give them the benefit of cover, which will then trigger Sister of the Thorns on a 5-up versus a 6-up for mortal wounds, which is pretty good. It's just that it's probably less consistent than just bringing the good old face punching Deepkin list. And, you know,
that's an interesting thought, though, using the ignore rend to combine with the Sisters of the Thorn. I kind of like that idea.
Oh, it's absolutely brutal, especially since you live in a, you know, in the previous edition of previous General's Handbook, or I guess the previous rule set, you could choose to not swing into a unit, even though you were locked into him. Well, now that you don't have that option anymore, you're kind of like, oh, well, I know if I swing into this, I'm probably going to take way more wounds back than I'm going to do to this unit. You know, it's been kind of like, there's a lot of units that's been propping up in the meta like that, like, you know, Secateurs of Azrael Halo, and then, you know, I'm kind of remember the other unit. Well, a lot of Khorne stuff also does mortal wounds when it dies, but basically, you know, reflective of that. Or, you know, Sister Daughters of Cain with their bucklers. For the overall event positioning, if you never played against Deepkin, to our listeners, they're very good at taking objectives and then basically making sure they hit you in the flanks where you're weakest, and then hopefully like get away with an early big enough lead that it's impossible for you to come back and, you know, win the game. Because once they commit to the table and remove the hard hitting aspect of the army, they just have to play. They can just play keep away. Like, they can just run away from you and not really engage in combat unless they have to.
People are never expecting those 30 thralls to come in from an outflank and just, you know, kind of annihilate an entire side of your army.
Oh, yeah. And then one of the other thing that most people don't appreciate too much about Deepkin is you don't actually have to reserve your army that much. Like, if you face an opponent which doesn't have shooting or like first turn charge trigger mechanics, like just putting the eels on the table is fast enough because of this double soul scryers and the plus six charge range, like, and their 14-inch movement, they can be, if somebody deploys on the line, it's like only a 4-inch charge for them, which with a reroll.
Yeah.
Be cautious. If you see eels on the table at the deployment line, you're going to want at least about like 8 inches away from your board edge.
At all times.
Just have a screen that you expect to die.
Well, yeah, and a screen that's in deploy 3 inches away from the screen. Do not be within 3.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, those are all kind of like fundamental, like Age of Sigmar things you pick up here and there. But, you know, against Deepkin, it's the only army where like it really, you have to be very cautious about how you deploy and how you maneuver until yeah. until they commit to the table, basically. And then I don't quite know what Nicholas Brehon brought the Seraphon list to that RTT. I'm guessing it's probably got Ripperdactyls, but I without having the list, it's impossible.
We can easily estimate Ripperdactyls, at least one Star Master. You know, probably who knows a Engine of the Gods.
Engine of the Gods, too. Yeah.
I do.
Is this the home store for Betty's Fighting Havanakins? I noticed a lot of the guys from that team are there.
Yeah, it's Gamer Haven from Spokane Valley.
Is that the tie-in there? Is Havanakins as in Haven?
Yeah.
They have their whole setup there. That's their gaming club. If you ever go to Gamers Haven in Spokane, Washington, they have their team has a bunch of bowling jerseys. They have their own logo, which is Betty, and she's a pinup type model or pinup drawing with holding a thunder hammer and wearing a Cadian Guardsman's helmet. They have this narrative of, you know, the Helveticans or whatever. It's pretty cool. It's pretty fun.
Well, for all those non-40K fans, those are all 40K references.
Yeah, very much 40K references all over the place. But yeah.
I do want to say one last thing about the game, the tournament output. So Matthew won 3-0, right? 5,320 points destroyed, you know, 680 short from maximum. Well, it could have been maximum because he could have played people of battalions and like under points for him. But his second place winner, which is the same record, 3-0, with 1,750 points destroyed.
Yeah, I think I've been hearing more and more rumbles about people who are like, get rid of points destroyed, use strength of schedule as your next tiebreaker. Like, more and more people are getting on board with that mindset of how to handle.
Well, it also really depends on, like, if the event, you know, most events don't make summoning, like, points destroyed, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I bet you a lot of people who played against Nicholas's, like, Seraphon list, he probably brought lots of summoning. So if you're only killing the things he summons on the table, you get punished on that point destroyed tiebreaker mechanic. It's just
And that was in a FAQ, right? Or was that in the actual General's Handbook?
Well, there's actually nowhere to describe how you're supposed to calculate points destroyed for a tournament tiebreaker anywhere. It's in every mission. Every mission describes to get a tie. After break a tie in a minor victory, you calculate points destroyed, and they in every mission describes don't use some units, don't use some units, don't use some. So there's no official place to calculate it. It's just every mission basically says don't use some units.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well,
and then, sorry, I was going to say one last thing about the event. They run a monthly event for anybody who's in Idaho, you know, northwestern Idaho or northeastern Washington. So if you're in the, you know, an hour, 2 hour drive distance, you should check it out. They run a monthly RTT and they're getting about like 16 players, you know, per event, you know, so it's pretty decent points and it's also going to be good practice for all the major GTs or majors themselves if you want to go attend.
Yeah, it certainly will be. There was another tournament that had happened this weekend. It was the Iron Realms Age of Sigmar GT. And, you know, not to review too much of that, but it was, again, won by our good friend Jonathan with his Flesh Eater Quartz. He's part of the Texas Masters League. So congrats on that, Jonathan. Now, we also do have a bit of information, a bit of a, let's call it secret information, you know, with the Bay Area Open. You know, we just happen to know and happen to have the hookup from someone who might be running that. Is that right, John?
Yeah, I hear through the grapevine that you guys might have the inside track on what the missions are for the coming up BAO. Of course, just kidding there. As you know, I'm going to be TOing the BAO coming up this May. It's going to be May 25th and 26th for the BAO Championship. And of course, we have the team event on the 24th. And I wish our buddy Matthew was here because I would remind him of the overall importance of reading that tournament pack. Read that tournament pack for success. And so to that event, we do have the tournament pack. It's up on the Frontline Gaming website. If you go to the link for the BAO 2019, it'll take you to the ticket link. And then the player pack is right there, right under where you click the link to buy your tickets is a link for the player pack itself. And straight through. I know, you know, we've got a couple different things. I tell you, based on a few things that have happened already this year, I'm not going too far out on a limb as far as the rules, this being a convention, a general gaming convention tournament. You know, I know the BAO is, of course, a major competitive tournament, but it's still at a general gaming convention. So from that perspective, I didn't want to go super hardcore with some of the rules. So for each of the missions, we are going to be using the Realmscapes. I've went ahead and picked the Realmscape ahead of time, as well as the Realmscape feature. We're not going to use any realm commands, and we're going to use one realm spell that has been pre-picked per realm, and that will be on the packet itself. So what do you think about that?
I just want to comment real quick about the one realm spell. I think it's a interesting thing, but like, honestly, like I have played with realm spells so much at this point that I'm just like so used to realm spells and all of my missions that like now that people are trying to like do some weird things, and I'm like, God damn it. Like I want to use the realm spells now. Like I'm just used to them just being everywhere. So it'll be interesting to see, because if I go to a tournament that doesn't use them, I'm like, oh, this is weird now. So
I hear you on that, Garrett. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've gotten used to, especially with having so many casters in my Skaven army.
Exactly.
I need it. But on the flip side, I've looked at the time, and you know that to me, completing games is a very important mechanic. Getting past turn three at the least. And believe me, this is a 5-turn game, not a 3-turn game. And so cutting it down to one realm spell for me is mostly about keeping the games a little bit shorter. That was one of the things I noticed at the Winter War, as well as at the Winter War, is we had the full selection of realm spells to choose from. And people, you know, would say, hey, well, you know, gosh, I have an extra spell. Let me see what these spells are. And like literally mid game going down the list, looking at the possibilities for the quote first time. So
I've definitely wasted probably a good 10 minutes a game where I'm just like in a really tight game. And I'm just like, I have an extra cast and I'm just sitting there. I'm like, oh, let me look at the realm spells. Like there must be a spell I'm missing. Like I've gotten to the point where I kind of like know, you know, the top three spells from each one I'm going to go after. But when you like go through and you're just like, no. And you're just like, I got to go back and open the packet. There's got to be one I got to remember. So I do waste probably 10 minutes a game in those really tight games, having to look up the realm spells to see like, is there a damage? Like when I'm desperately needing to damage out a unit in combat so I don't have to retreat, I'll just like go look up and desperately try to find another damage spell or something like that. So yeah, definitely that does save time. I definitely understand that.
Is it definite?
Right.
It is definite. Very definitely.
I want to say though, like in reason I particularly like John's like format for this, and this is a feedback we've heard from multiple TOs about their communities around at least in the Pacific Northwest. Realm spells are a new thing that was added this edition, and it took a long time for people to even want to start running realm spells, and to the point that most people don't even really know the spells themselves, and it is kind of a they feel it's an unfair advantage for, you know, certain folks to basically come down to an event and like know like the realm spells they're going to use in that event right now. But the problem is we're running into is that it's just that it's outside of the unfairness, people are not prepared and they don't remember, and it slows down games. I don't know. I feel like forcing people to learn the realm spells drip by drip is probably a better approach. That's just, you know, for now, I'm definitely with Garrett as well. It's like, hey guys, it's like it's been like what, almost a year and a half now. Yeah. You know, figure this out.
Here.
But to be honest, I think where Games Workshop dropped the ball really badly on this is especially on the app. There should have been a tab in the app where you can basically see the realm spells, or they should have made card stock to see the realm spells. Like I've printed like third party like card stock for all the realm spells and command abilities, so that when I go. When I go to an event, use realm spells, like I can literally hand them to my opponent and then use them myself so I can look. We both know like equally like what is in the realm spell.
And you just got quick reference rather than trying to open up a book, flip to the right page. Yeah, that's smart.
That idea. That's nice.
To comment on what you were saying about the Pacific Northwest just not using them, like I think out here on the East Coast, Nova Open was built with 2.0 in mind. The TO was actually like told by the Nova staff, like, oh, don't make your event packet yet, because the 2.0 book was going to drop right before he made his pack. And so he used full blown 2.0 rules. And so we kind of got used to using realm spells. But what he did is he did one realm on day one and one realm on day two. So it's like day one was all realm of life and day two was all realm of metal. So it's like people at least got to only had to prepare for two realms. And I liked that approach because, as you said, the slow drip of like, okay, let's all learn the realm of life today spells. And then it's like, let's all learn the realm of metal for day two. And so you only had to picture one thing. So that helped a lot. And then,
that is something that's becoming a lot more common too.
Oh, really? As have other events done that? Because I actually really like that idea. And that's a way to kind of limit some of the wackier realms. I mean, certainly you can pick two tamer realms for your event without, making it the realm of shadow
The Riptide GT in Bremerton, Washington coming up in May. Yeah, it's all going to be, I think it's three missions that are realm of life, one or two missions that are going to be realm of death.
That is correct. And that's the similar approach that that's from Nova, right? It's just basically forcing your opponent into a very small subset of spells, but not like necessarily one.
Yeah, I mean, on one end of things, it does create anticipation of going, oh, well, I will go to a tournament where there won't be Inferno Blades from Realm of Fire. But at the same time, then you do know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I'm always a fan of events that, are open about their event packet, what missions they're going to be, what realms they're going to be, and all those things. Like, I mean, I'm just looking through. It's like John's packet. I don't think he has Inferno Blades when he's in the Realm of Fire.
Nope. It looks like all the ones that John picked, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, John, but it looks like all the ones that you picked are the ones we listed as the default spell in the rule book.
For the most part.
For the most part, I guess. Yeah. So it's like, John is not also having Inferno Blades, which I like that, because then you can build your list knowing, like, it's not like guessing, am I going to get Inferno Blades today? It's like, no, ahead of time.
Yeah, so. But like, even Garrett, like, it's, so the spells we're talking about, for folks who don't know, Inferno Blades is a Lord of Fire spell that basically, if I remember correctly, adds a damage to the weapon to melee weapons.
It's my favorite spell.
Think of 30 Grimghast Reapers doing 2 damage a swing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, and there's a bunch of Realm of Fire is probably the one realm that has kind of like the most exploitable spells.
Realm of Death has some really exploitable spells.
Yeah. And it does as well. I think Realm of Fire is the one that punishes, like, any army that didn't really bring any magic defense the most, because it makes like generic units like incredibly deadly on the table.
Fair enough.
And then
the Realm of Fire punishes Khorne armies. It shuts down their charging and leaves them with no buffs.
And then additionally, the last thing too is that the Realm of Fire is is it the one with the command ability where you could just remove terrain pieces off the table, or just making them like ignore like rules?
Or you make them deadly or something, like you can explode them into deadly or something like that.
Oh, I thought it was just like it stripped them of their rule and then made them deadly terrain, which I think is hilarious in the current meta with all these like free terrain pieces. You're like, okay, that Gloomgrind shipwreck, it doesn't do anything.
Except I'm still waiting for someone to build the meta busting Iron Jaw list that is just that one battalion where you get two units and the heroes and you just burn objectives. Yeah,
Garrett,
just
don't have point values anymore.
Oh, it's definitely point files? Oh, damn.
There is a command ability that is similar, that does a similar thing, if I remember correctly. I don't know. It's not as impressive anymore.
Yeah, not as impressive.
Back to the realm abilities, I think that approach that John is doing, dripping in spell realms and spell rules, is good. I just hope by the time we get to the next general handbook, A, some of the spells would have been adjusted in terms of power level. And then B, most people will be more welcoming to and accept that as a kind of a normal behavior in like events or even regular games. I think it adds a lot of flavor. And it also, it doesn't punish armies which have like no books out and then have really terrible like War Scroll spells in their casters. I mean, granted, it also buffs up armies which have great spells and great books with more awesome spells in the moment. But I don't know. I just feel like it's a good flavor to the game. Outside of just spells, and it needs.
I will say, John, it really does look like you enjoy the Shadowed Mansions Realmscape feature, since that was also the same one in Winter Wars for Realm of Shadows.
Well, that's
Do you like what I did there? And that's going to be round five in the Realm of Shadow. And we're going to do the mission is total commitment. So, right, we have no reserves, but then we start jumping around using the Realm of Shadow ability. So,
and you gave Bridge of Shadows.
That wasn't lost on me.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that'd be a little bit of a fun mechanism there. So keep sort of everybody gets to outflank in that mission. Other than that, I tried to keep the missions a little on the, shall we say, the let's not have feel badsies side. So round one, we're going to do shifting objectives in the realm
love
of death.
Love that mission.
Yeah, right? It's always fun.
I love that mission. Yeah, it's weird. That mission, like it feels like a mission that is a really horrible mission because, you know, it randomly changes which one is worth the most. But every single time I play that mission, if you don't get a concession early because the person just like, you know, doesn't know how to play the mission, gives up, like it always ends really tight, like 16 to 14. Every time I play it, even if it feels super one-sided.
See, for me, this one becomes like one way or another. It's a complete wash by like turn two. Like
Have you played it until turn five? That's the thing. It's like it feels like a wash turn two. Like people will concede turn two because it feels like a wash. But every time like someone seems like they should concede, and then but they actually play it out, it ends up being super tight.
You can't predict when you're going to get that 3-point objective and having it jump out from under you.
Like I've been like 9-3 really? In turn three or something like that. And then it ends like 15, 14. Like it's
that's totally not me.
I'm with Garrett on that.
Yeah.
Thankfully it's because the way they chose the deployment being long table or short table. Mm-hmm. The gap between the objective is very small. So like slow armies can still recuperate between objectives.
Yes.
More than like if you thought it was a long table edge deployment,
it would have been awful. Yeah,
it would have been an awful mission design.
Yeah. So I was first very skeptical about shifting objectives because they used it at the first Nova Open. I was very skeptical about it, but then as I played it, I'm like, I really like this mission.
My
like,
Night I, Hunt I really likes this it, mission.
Yeah, I think the one mission I would say, John, that I don't like is Star Strike.
Oh, really?
I like Gift from the Heavens better. My problem with Star Strike is that the meat of the game comes in turn three. And so it's like, it's really annoying that you don't know how you're going to play the game until over halfway through the game. Like,
right. Yeah, this one definitely rewards mobile armies as far as that goes.
Well, I feel what I've noticed in Star Strike is it literally can come down to it's like turn three, they come down, you're just like, well, that's game because all the objectives are where you needed them to be. Like by turn three, you have a lot of action going, or you should.
Right.
And then turn three happens, and then the objectives land where, you know, half the armies have already been killed and everyone's already where they're going to be. And it's like, oh, cool. Mission game. Like I've conceded on turn three. I've conceded so many times and I've had concessions on turn three a lot.
I love that mission because it forces armies, which are like mostly like Gristlegore type lists, which are, I'm going to go in your deployment zone and just, you know, blow you into oblivion. They get punished in those missions, right?
I feel like Gift from the Heavens does that same thing, but it doesn't just completely upset the flow of the game.
Okay. I like
Gift from the Heavens a lot, but Star Strike, I feel like Star Strike went to, I don't like that they come out turn three.
I mean,
I like having the three objectives as opposed
I agree.
To two,
I think that Star Strike is great for the exact reasons that we've mentioned. I mean, I know that you're not a big fan of it, but I think that it's really good for mobile army. It's really good for armies that can actually show up turn three, like Nighthawn and Stormcast, or armies that can, you know, outflank in a way or ambush. It's super helpful, and it's a great one. I will say,
all right,
I appreciate John, I appreciate the fact that you do not have that you don't have Duality of Death or one of the missions that requires a specific unit to be holding the objective. The only reason why I mention this is because I seem to have bad luck going on those missions against armies or players that just I cannot move. Like at Winter Wars when I had Duality of Death against Vlad's list and he won before I could even have a turn because he just plopped everything down, buffed everything up and went, cool, you don't have any way of getting these, you know?
Yeah, no, that mission just rewards certain armies and punishes other armies. It's to me, it's just not a balanced enough mission. You know, I don't know if you guys noticed too. One of the other things I did was The first round of each day, shifting objectives and battle for the pass, are the long ways deployment. I figure first thing in the morning, your back is a little fresher, then you can get away with that deployment. But then the normal sort of dawn of war type deployment for the other rounds of the day.
What? I'm noticing no.
Yeah, what? No total conquest? Are you telling me that you don't enjoy that deployment?
Oh my God.
Nope. Again, you know, I'm picturing us being in long rows at a con. Not necessarily the best arrangement of tables. So.
I will say one thing about Total Conquest. I haven't played it since the last General's Handbook, when you had the weird, like, they had the even worse deployment where they had it with like curves and stuff and they didn't box it out. And honestly, I get it now. Like, playing it at Adepticon, it really forces you to spread your army out. Like, that the way it's deployed, you have a lot of space, but you also don't have a lot of space. And so where all the objectives are, you have to splinter your army hard. And so armies that require, like, basically, like, I am going to bunch in my little death ball and go murder everything, those armies are punished on Total Conquest. Massively punished. And I like that, actually. So you need, like, on my Legion of Knight list, it's super great because I can just kind of come in from anywhere and every unit kind of doesn't require a lot of support. And so it does well. Well, I played against a Nagash list and he kind of was not doing well because, like, he has Nagash and 30 Grimgrest Reapers and that's his list. So he did not do well in that mission. I mean, he beat me ultimately, but he struggled.
Yeah. I was going to say... Another key point about that mission too, that is for those, and this is a key reminder to read your mission packet,
boys and ladies. Read your mission packet.
Those missions are the one that we're talking about. Total Conquest is an 18-inch deployment, no man's land between both you and your opponent's army.
Well, Total Conquest is even different. Like, it's weird because you got that weird staircase one. So it's like corners
are 18 inches, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
and then and I was gonna say,
which means in your face, right?
Yeah, I was gonna piggyback with John. There's none of your missions with an 18-inch no man's land.
Yep, nope, none of that happening either.
I don't know how
I picked some very generic type missions. Again, I'm picturing a lot of con action.
All right,
some newer players, all that good stuff. So
it feels very 1.0-y. You know, like I feel like in 2.0 is when we got to see all those 18-inch deployments, and I feel like. It's a very, like, the 18-inch deployment is the new 24-inch deployment. Like, you see them everywhere, and people have really just adjusted their math to be like,
it's so hot right now.
Deployment and 24 inches, you're like, I know, so hot.
I do like those. It's like, you know, funny, if you go to the team tournament, I am using a bunch of wacky deployments. So there's where you'll get your wacky deployment Jones on, as it were.
Never mind. Total Commitment, round 5 is an 18-inch no man's land. I forgot about that one. More than 9 inches from enemy territory. Yep, yeah. It's an 18-inch deployment.
Oh, okay.
So. Yeah, right. You're right. There it is. See?
No better part of valor?
You know what? You know what? I appreciate the fact that you are spreading out the missions. I mean, normally at a GT, you're expected to have at least one of those missions. So I want to make sure that it's known that it's not me ragging on the missions where, you know, only a behemoth and a hero can score the objectives or anything like that. I actually personally think that those types of missions are really important to have in events, but not in every event. And it seems like it's always there in every event, every one-day event, every two-day event. It's just one of those is always a staple. So seeing a two-day event that doesn't have any of them is it's a little refreshing.
Yeah, like I said, I'm hoping for a little bit something different here. This is the inaugural year of the BAO as far as that goes. It is still a frontline gaming event, so I didn't want to go too far off the track with frontline gaming, you know, kind of how Scott's been running some of the events, the SoCal Open, LVO, that kind of stuff. On the flip side, you know, I have a few things that I always like to include in a tournament, in particular, the self-score sportsmanship rubric. Right. So once again, your main score will include 6 points of sportsmanship. Now, it's not enough to change who wins the game, but it is enough to sort out perhaps whether you get third or fourth place as far as that goes. So just kind of run down the list here real quick. So for each player, again, self-score, sportsmanship rubric. Do you have your list uploaded to BCP? Do you have your rules and war scrolls, phone, tablet, or printed? Do you have your dice, tape measure, or other game aids? Do Did your game complete at least 3 full turns? Did you play fairly and honestly? Are all of your models painted to a 3-color minimum? If yes to all of them, the player earns 6 points. Deduct 1 point
for each missing criteria. I love it. I love it. Now, John, for that then, is 3-color minimum required to play?
Absolutely. 3-color minimum required to play. It's
so at a minimum 1 point.
I would say it's at a minimum, you should be getting that point. Otherwise, we're pulling models. I had considered making it, quote, tabletop standard, but yeah, we'll just leave That's it at fine. 3 colors for now. Again, inaugural year.
Alex, you're going to get chipped at that sportsmanship score when you have to self-score. And did you get
okay,
game?
Okay, hold on. Whoa. I always finish my games.
You know, and that's a tough one for me too, because, you know, when I run a 40K event, I always require the players to complete 3 full turns. Otherwise, both players take a 0-point loss. And I was real tempted to
Jeremy,
do that for AOS
Jeremy,
as well.
Jeremy, our last game lasted 25 minutes.
Yeah. You know why it lasted 25 minutes? Because I was done. <with you. laughs> I lost.
Oh.
Question, John.
Yeah.
Do you have your tiebreakers broken down of like, are you going to use points destroyed as a tiebreaker? Or are you going to use strength to schedule? Do you have that listed out in your packet? I'm just awful at reading packets, so I may have missed it.
Right. Let's see. I may not have actually listed that out. I will be using strength of schedule, not kill points. And there will be no ties allowed in this event. So if you come to the end of the game and you look at your points destroyed per the mission and you're still at a tie, then the players will dice off until there is a clear winner. We will not have any of the supposed shenanigans that happened at the LVO. And I think you guys all remember what happened there. So no ties at the BAO.
Trial by combat. Do it as the old gods intended, and just have them fight.
Well, that
it
might
out.
Work out. You know, we could get the wooden spoon weapon from AOS and the wooden spoon event weapon from 40K. And battle to first blood. Probably.
There you go. I like that. That's good. Really even.
I like the no ties criteria. That makes it. I know most people don't do this, but there are some cases of folks who like to with their teammate that like to settle on a tie. So I'm glad that's in the game. That's in the rule book.
Well,
I think
not only would that not have been allowed, but that is an easy yellow card.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you get caught, yeah, that is an easy yellow card. I'm glad that's...
Yeah, of course. And we will, of course, be using the ITC code of conduct there. That is a given at this point.
Very smart. Very good. We all do appreciate
that. I'm super looking forward to totally giving you some yellow cards, Alex. I got my eye on
you. All right. Well, you know, with 3-hour rounds, I'm easily going to be finishing my games, as most, if not all of us, should be, unless we're running like 350 rats.
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, you know, someone, you know, real fast and loose the rules like me, you never know. I'm pretty slimy.
Yeah, you can just get it all done. You're That's like, boom, fair. I'm gonna speed move these guys, so I'm gonna move the first model and then everything else.
It's okay. Most people look into your deep deep black eyes and just quit. After their
eyes. Yikes.
Damn. Cold, hard stone of eyes.
Wow.
It's a real cold problem.
I tell you, that might be our buddy Michael Schwartz after he gets his new Slaanesh collection going in a couple weeks here. So we'll see how that goes too.
Speaking of that, I want to know a little bit, you know, this is not something directly related to the singles, but you are also, as mentioned earlier, hosting the Bay Area Open Age of Sigmar doubles tournament. And Michael is my partner in Team Pleasure Pirates with my death.
Oh, yes.
His host of Slaanesh. So we're probably going to be utilizing Team Pleasure Pirates all over again.
Excellent. So we'll have some known champions in the team event. That'll be Friday night. It's actually starting at 2 o'clock. Check-in is 1 o'clock, and it's ending at 9 o'clock at night. So getting a quick 3-round tournament in the afternoon, and that's 1,000 points per player, right? And of course, you and your player don't, or you and your teammate don't have to have the same faction or anything like that going on. And we're basically, each player is going to have two lists. And so when you come up to the table against your opponents, you and your teammate will each pick one of your lists. You'll put it face down on the table. You'll push that across. The opponents will do the same thing. And everybody will simultaneously reveal the list that they're going to play for the event.
I like it. I like it a lot. And is this also going to be an ITC event?
This is, of course, going to be an ITC event. You know, anyway, any event I run, if there's any conceivable way to call it ITC, it will be an ITC event.
I think you just have to say that sentence and it's conceivable.
And right? That's it.
For some of our audience, which we know we became apparent on the last interview we did, ITC event just means scoring. It does not mean anything else than, you know, set of rules. We're not, you know, the TOs can run whatever. As you can tell, John is running what the hell he wants out of it.
Yes.
Yep. ITC is just a scoring mechanism and also a good way for people to have something to strive for at the end of the year in terms of a circuit, you know, based for faction and so forth. It is not intended to be enforcing some kind of preset rules or expectation upon like events, basically.
Exactly. It's just a checkbox, nothing more.
Yep.
Well, we all look forward to Bay Area Open. It's going to be a blast. John, when again is Bay Area Open?
Sure. Again, that is going to be at the Kubla Khan Gaming Convention up in Burlingame, which is near the San Francisco airport for easy travel. And the BAO Championship is May 25th and 26th. And the BAO Team event is going to be May 24th. And, you know, if you haven't been to Kubla Khan, it is a large, long-running convention. Lots of different gaming there. In years past, I've gone and played Battletech and involved myself in a lot of other fun games there. Done some RPG stuff, all kinds of stuff. So if you bring your significant other, your friends, there is plenty of gaming for everybody to do. Large open gaming areas, the whole nine yards. And it's actually split between two very nice hotels, plenty of bars and liquor stores in between. So it's everything we need for a good game convention.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, we will, most of us, if not all of us, will be there. So hopefully you can stop by and enjoy some Age of Sigmar goodness.
You'll get to enjoy me losing in my bet and shame to Vincent Morgado by handing them a bottle of tequila. And then I also take bribes and payments in form of shots. So if you want an easier game at the table, if you see, we play each other. Yeah, there's a solution.
There we go. For all of our listeners out there, you want to beat Jeremy Vessier, you just get him drunk.
There you go.
Or if you want an easier game, not guaranteeing a win.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could bribe him to win. You'd be like,
we might be able to bribe him.
No, I am.
Jeremy, I gotta ask you a question. Okay, so you know, I was just up there at the Rose City Wrath, and you were incredibly generous, incredibly kind to loan me your army. And then in my drunken buffoonery through the weekend, I had thought that I had lost a model. In fact, I was certain that I had lost a model from your army. I paid you twice for the models for that army. And it turns out that the model wasn't missing. What's the story there? Where did this model appear from?
Well, it was the weekend I was handing it off, the army, all the eels to be painted by our co-host, Matthew Pashby. And you told me you were missing a model. I took you at your word. I didn't even bother counting myself and handed them to Matthew. And Matthew, in mid painting, he just can't figure it out. But he's like, I can't. All the models are there. I must be counting wrong. He counted like six times before he called me to tell me, hey, Jeremy, all the models are there.
Oh, my gosh.
And so then I said, you know, I am letting you know. And the models are there. Dory, I'm sending the money back. Thanks for everything. No worries. It was just, it was just the weirdest, like, kind of like the missing eel.
That's too funny.
In a ghostly manner. Just be a
that stick. Is too funny. You know, I even looked at the pictures that the TO posted of the event, and I saw a picture of one of my tables. I was able to count the eels there. I'm like, okay, I saw nine eels on day one, but they were definitely missing day two. But I'm glad that, you know, sort of all's well that ends well, and I'm glad the missing eel found his way home, as it were.
Yeah. So it didn't, then jump around, much like our next unit review.
Yes, exactly. Going to our unit review for this episode, we are going to be looking over the Boingrot Bounders, which are a Gloomspite Kits unit. They're basically their equivalent to knights, a bunch of mounted little goblins. For those of you who have not encountered this unit before, it's 2 wounds. They have 4-up armor save. Very low bravery of 5. They move 2d6 inches with fly. So just as Jeremy mentioned, they are bouncing all over the place. They have 2-inch range with their poken lances, which are 2 attacks. Hitting on 4s, wounding on 4s, rend and 1 damage. They also can attack with their mount, their fang-filled gob at 1 inch with 2 attacks. Hitting on 4, wounding on 3s, also 1 rend. And 1 damage. Now, this is a unit, can have a leader with who can add 1 to their hit rolls with their lance, but they have a couple of additional rules on top of that. John, why don't you take it away by talking about Boing and Smash?
Boing and Smash, right? Well, first off, as you guys know, I picked up the Gloomspite Gits. Totally not going to do a Gloomspite Gits army later this year. Not going to happen. But I just sit back and enjoy reading this battle tome. It's kind of one of those fun things. And again, you see a unit called the Boingrot Bounders with a Z on the end. I mean, you start laughing as soon as you see the name, as soon as you say the name. And, a unit of Boingrot Bounders has any number of models, each armed with a poken lance. A poken lance. They're too funny. Now, these guys actually are can come in units of 5 to 15, and they're 100 points per 5 guys. And I don't know about you. I probably see myself running, 15 of these, a big old block for 300. Not too expensive. You get a bunch of attacks. And then they're going to go in, and they're going to do that Boing Smash, which basically, it's a pretty common mechanic that we see on a lot of these cavalry units, that after this unit has made a charge, pick 1 enemy unit within 1 inch of this unit and roll a dice for each model in this unit. For each 4+, that enemy unit suffers 1 mortal wound. So this is pretty much the same rule that we just saw on the Blood Crushers when we got all excited last week or week before about the Blood Crushers and how they're, each model is now doing a mortal wound on the charge, blah, blah, blah. Well, we see basically the same mechanic going on here with the Boing Smash and the Boingrot Bounders. Now, unfortunately, unlike the Khorne units, which are more expensive, so we'll put that to them, these guys on a 6 don't do the D3 mortal wounds. And honestly, I don't know if there's a battalion out there that's going to really buff these guys up. What do you think there, Garrett? Have you had a chance to look at battalions or anything to go with these guys? I mean, they looks like a decent sort of mid-range unit. How do I make them super deadly?
So first, I do want to mention about the charging ability. What was they're the one thing that they're different about than the Skull Crushers and the Blood Crushers is that you only need to get 1 model within 1 inch of an enemy, and then you roll a die per every model in the unit. So you could just like do a giant like spear missile and just like tag 1 unit with this like Congo line of them, and you roll 15 dice, and for every 4+, you do a mortal Ooh. Wound. Yeah. So it's worded differently than you don't have to roll per model in range. You literally just be like tag a unit, roll for every guy in the unit, no matter how far away they are. So that's kind of a rules abuse you could do. With them.
So that's kind of like the eels then, right? Morisar Guard.
Exactly. But as far as battalions, they have, I think it's like the Squig Stampede or whatever.
Yeah. Squig Rider Stampede,
which, allows, which basically makes them, you get to reroll the random movement. So you get, they're more reliable movement is what it does. It's a small little battalion that only requires like 2 to 3 units of them and an optional Mangler Squig. So it's not a bad battalion. It doesn't do much, but it also doesn't require a lot of units. So it's kind of a nice little, just like, oh, do you want another relic? Slap this battalion on. I like the Boingrot Bounders, although they do require a lot of help because they're pretty decent on their own. But for 100 points for 5, they tend to not do great if they're not on the charge. Jeremy, you had a lot of thoughts on this from earlier discussions. You want to go more into it?
Yeah, and then when we talked about this briefly, but for our listeners, they do have a major flaw in their design, which is that A, they need the charge, and B, their random movement distance.
Yeah.
Right? So the battalion's almost like, if you're going to dedicate a lot of points to that unit, you're almost forcing yourself to take that battalion, because you're going to want to make sure, like, that turn you need them to charge, you're not rolling like a 3-inch movement. So
yeah, exactly.
There is a lot of ways to, like, the Bad Moon allegiance ability, or
run in charge.
Yeah, lets them run in charge. So it's an extra D6 roll on your movement. There also the Squid Lore, which is a spell that Moon Clan shamans get, which also lets you run in charge if you don't have the full benefit of the moon. You got the Loon Boss on the squids, the Mangler Squid, which gives them a +1 to wound for all squid units within within 18 inches of them, which is a really good command ability, especially since the Maw, if you're not getting the charge, is the best damaging ability you have on that unit, which is not the one that, it's not the Poking Lance, it's the Mangler Maw, and that makes it wounding on twos, which is pretty, pretty awesome. Yep. And then there's also the Loon Boss on a squid, which just gives them an extra move distance of 3 inches, I believe.
Which is really good with their random movement. Like, that one alone is just like, okay, like 2d6 +3 becomes an actual, like, devastating number. I mean, your minimum 5 inches.
Yep.
But, like, that's if you roll snake eyes. On average, you're going, like, 10 inches between, like, 11 inches. So that one does speed them up a bunch. And then you could add cogs on top of that to really...
Yeah. It's really funny when you add the cogs to it.
But there's one last caveat I'm going to say, and then I'll let Alex tell us about the cog. But they don't have the grot keyword in them. So when you're planning and building a list around them, make sure you don't think like the other characters that do buffing mechanic actually buff those at all. They don't have, like, a lot of it is very keyword specific in the Gloom Guides book. So be careful when you build lists to make sure, like, you're like, oh, I thought this regular Loom Boss would give them mortal wounds on sixes to wound. Nope, doesn't work on them. So just be very cautious of that. But back.
Oh yeah, I see that they're part of the Squig keyword elements. Huh?
They do have Moon Clan. They just don't have Grot.
That's very interesting. I didn't notice that either. Okay. Well, you know, you got to be like any army. Yeah, be very aware of your keywords. You know, they're to me, I get a little nervous about anything with random variants, especially with something like movement. So I would, if I was a Gloom Spite player, I certainly would be adding the cogs just to make it, a minimum 4-inch movement before having any sort of buffs from a character. But still, you know, 2d6 can also be advantageous. You know, if we were just rolling average, that's still not bad. That's, you know, a little bit, having fly with a 6 or a 7 or even an 8-inch move is definitely not bad at all.
Yeah. The one thing I've played against these guys, a friend of mine is running like 2 units of 10 with a bunch of Mangler Squigs. Like, he's going all in on the Boyne Grots. And the interesting thing I've noticed about them is their lances have a 2-inch reach. And that has come into play a ton, because as far as like cavalry attacks go, like them having rend without needing a charge is like really cool.
They're also on 32 mil bases, right?
Yeah. So like them having rend without needing the charge, most cavalry on the charge will gang rend. These guys just always have rend. 2 attacks, 4s and 4s, rend 1. And if you got the Mangler Squig Loon Boss, they have their 4s and 3s, rend 1. But then that 2-inch reach is like, oh, I only need to get, like, you can get a unit of 10. And it's like, yeah, you know, the Maws are the better attacks, but it's like you have like 6 Maws in range and then all 10 lances are in range and they're all at 2 attacks. And it's like, you can get a lot of attacks in with a 2-inch reach. So as far as cavalry goes, it's kind of impressive that you get
2-inch reach is always kind of an awesome thing to have as far as that goes. And I tell you, I didn't realize these guys were on a 32 mil base. Combine that with that 2-inch range, you're definitely swinging with 2 ranks of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's correct.
Yeah. It just comes back down to that darn 2d6 move. You know, it's anytime you have units with that variable move as their base, the potential is that they're screaming across the board, but the reality is they are sitting there with their dicks in their hand doing nothing.
Yeah, that's why you just, like, the battalion mitigates that. The cogs mitigate that, and the Loon Boss and Giant Squig, you have a lot of things to mitigate them, but you have to have those things to mitigate them. They're definitely a unit you have to base your army around. They're not a unit you just slot in and call it a day.
Yeah.
They're really good, but you have to base your army on them. They can't, they're not a solo unit.
And on the turn, you're going to get run in charge. You need to make sure you have enough command points to make them automatically run 6 inches. That's like a key component of that. Like,
I mean, unless it depends on the situation, but like you should, yes.
So, you know, and the reason why I was talking about the keyword thing, like last time is I didn't play against him, but I saw somebody play them at an event locally where they were throwing out fanatics from units of Wingrots.
Oh. Which,
if you could do that, it would be amazing.
Yeah, but that would be amazing. The other great buff you could throw on them is the sneaky snufflers to plus one attack on both them and their mount, because they do have solid attack.
Yeah, they take the red one. Yeah, it's the thing is like the snufflers are very slow. Yeah. In comparison to them, and so I don't feel like that unit needs to be. Especially if you have a heavy point dedication to it, you don't want that unit to sit behind, like, and very effectively. No, it's I think you, in terms of a hobbying, you can do some really cool things with that army, because I want to see a Bretonian Boingrots like army, just like paint like
what
it's like a Bretonian knight, like just have like a bunch of heraldry and like.
I mean, they're straight up heavy cavalry grot knights. Like that's what they are.
Well,
they do have that poke and lance, so that is a knight thing, right?
Poke and lance.
Yeah, and then, you know, the Lady of the Lake is just a bad moon. It's all good. Like, it's the perfect army to make Bretonians great again. Just play Boingrot's guys.
There you go.
make some, like, squig griffins. So you can have, like, a lord on a griffin, but it's, like, squig griffins. So, like, griffin, like, squigs with, like, griffin wings.
Add a bunch of little bat wings to them and be like, they're, like...
There you go.
That would be your mangler squigs.
Put some of my bat wings to them, man. There you go. You got your griffins.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people will appreciate us talking about Bretonians as goblins and grots. I think, you know, our fearless leader, Vincent Morgado, would really appreciate it.
I was always expecting him to kind of come busting into the podcast all of a sudden. Hey, you guys!
Smash down the wall. Hey, watch your mouth!
Maybe he'll add something in post.
I'm afraid he'll add something in post-edit.
He's going to mute this entire section. Just cut.
He's just going to somehow this entire recording is going to get lost.
I just trying to come up with any way possible for people to bring Bretonians back to the table in some form of manner.
I mean, flesh eater courts, but that's
flesh eater courts are Bretonians.
Yeah, it'd just be nice if it was like, you know, like bright colors instead of slimy blood and pale
skin. Fair. There's only bright red.
Oh boy,
no argent.
Well, that's a great conversion idea, and hopefully we can see something like that fun, either with a Flesh Eater Quartz or maybe with Gloomspite Gits. So if anyone ends up making that type of conversion, making that time army, do let us know on Facebook. Be sure to review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or especially Facebook. It's much appreciated, and be sure to listen to both the X-Wing and 40K episodes of the Wide World of Wargaming. Hope to hear from you soon. Alex, Jeremy, John, and Garrett signing off.
Later, folks.
Goodbye.
Later.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.